Whenever we talk about the war-torn nation of Afghanistan, we often mention the capital, Kabul, sometimes just to identify where a correspondent is reporting from. Well, today, let's pay the capital a true visit. Kabul was once this lush haven, a cultural center tucked in the mountains with several hundred thousand residents. But decades of war, migration, and a rapidly growing population of 5 million people have left the city's infrastructure in ruins. 70% of Kabul is now a cramped ad hoc development where water, sewers, and electricity are all in short supply. NPR's Sean Carberry has this profile of a city on the edge.
Kabul today is essentially an overcrowded, sprawling dust bowl. Between the lack of vegetation on the surrounding hills and the lack of pavement, there's a constant haze of dust hovering above the city. If there's a defining sound of Kabul, it just might be the melodies of the ubiquitous ice cream carts. All day long you hear happy birthday or other melodies that stick in your head like mental flypaper. And the carts are present in every neighborhood, even extremely poor ones like Tapu Marinjan. It's a densely packed, unplanned neighborhood clinging to a hillside.
There is no electricity. There is no water. So we buy it from private businesses.
Aji Gul has lived here for the last 4 years. He's a street vendor struggling to make ends meet. A rugged man in his 50s with reddish-brown skin, he once had a nice house in the city. He spent 10 years in Pakistan to escape the fighting in Kabul, and when he returned, he found he could only afford to live here in Tapu Marinjan.
The government has no plans here. There are people trying to tell the government we need services. There are a lot of problems here, but we have no choice. We can't afford to go anywhere else.
4 years ago, he says, there were a lot of vacant houses and empty lots here. Now it's full of people from all over the country. Some came to escape the fighting elsewhere in the country. Others came hoping for better opportunities. 17 people live in Ajigul's small two-room house. Some homes here have more than 20 residents.
The poorest people coming to the city are doubling up in houses because that's the closest that they can get to their jobs. So they tend to move in with relatives and stay as long as they possibly can.
Jolien Leslie is an architect who's been working here for 20 years. He has a unique perspective on the growth of the city. We talk on the hillside near the Nader Shah Mausoleum, a famous Kabul landmark.
We're looking out over to the east, which used to be all agricultural areas. But as far as the eye can see, is a kind of low-rise sprawl over towards the mountains.
So the entire cityscape has changed.
We walk to the other side of the hilltop. We pass a group of small girls fetching water for their homes and men and boys selling horse rides.
The old city's basically on the left, and the old city stretches over to the north to a blue dome, which is Bulikheshti Mosque, which is a 20th century mosque, but on a very old site. So this was basically the entire extent of the city before.
Now the city center is like a buoy floating in a sea of sprawl. Leslie says that once a center of culture, commerce, and educated classes, the city center more and more resembles a slum. As more people have crowded in to be closer to work opportunities, drugs, prostitution, and criminality have moved in as well. But the scene isn't all bleak. There's some new high-rises going up in neighborhoods where people are renovating their homes. Houses painted in bright pastels and sporting steel frame windows with mirrored glass stand out against the mud-colored houses in the hills.
There's a very, very clear process of consolidation and gentrification.
Leslie says that people who are living on what is technically seized government land are less worried about being kicked out, so they're investing more in their houses.
And they're also more prosperous. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Look at those guys, you know, putting on another floor on top of that building there. That money's coming from somewhere. Somebody's got a job or somebody's got a shop. So it's quite a positive sign from that point of view.
There is economic growth in the city. There are people who have made a lot of money working in the security industry or high-paying jobs with foreign aid organizations. At the same time, there's plenty of money coming from corruption and the country's massive opium trade. That's why people refer to the gaudy new multi-story mansions springing up around the city as poppy palaces. And Leslie says that although many of the hillside houses look well-built from the outside, much of the new construction today is extremely shoddy.
So when there is the big... And it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. I think when the big Kabul earthquake happens, it's going to be quite scary, depending on, you know, the intensity, because a lot of these buildings that look quite nice are going to come down like a pack of cards.
Driving from the hilltop to the city center highlights another of Kabul's challenges, traffic. The mostly unpaved streets are choked with 5 to 10 times the number of cars they were designed to handle. On top of that, vendors, beggars, pedestrians, bicycles, and donkey carts all compete for space. And there's not a working traffic light in the city. It can take hours to cross from one side of Kabul to the other. Because of problems like this, people like Galib Nemat, a government engineer, are moving to some of the new planned developments on the periphery of the city.
Because the periphery of Kabul is not yet polluted. And the rest of Kabul, unfortunately, there were dreams, there were poets, there were poems, there were so many books written on Kabul, beautiful Kabul, but I'm not seeing it now.
I'm standing in the parking lot of Shaharak Arya. It's a new planned community in Kabul, and I'm surrounded by 5 to 6 story off-white apartment buildings. This is very much of a gated, high-end community designed to be self-sufficient. Rather than car horns and ice cream vendors and people in the street, you hear periodic airplanes or helicopters flying overhead since it's across the street from the airport.
Here, there is very good parking, playgrounds for kids, water 24 hours, modern construction, so we're all happy here.
Dr. Mohammed Faridun moved to Shaharak area 3 years ago. It has its own restaurants and grocery stores. It also has its own water supply and sewage system. By the time the development is complete, there will be thousands of apartments and a shopping mall. So people will only have to venture from this urban island to go to work.
I like this because it's a closed compound. It's very good in terms of security. It's so quiet and peaceful. My old neighborhood was noisy, and there were lots of problems.
Ultimately, many with means are looking to escape the chaos of Kabul, to isolate themselves and secure compounds away from the masses struggling to get by. But only a tiny minority can hide out in these gated communities. The rest are stuck, trying to survive in a city stretched way beyond its capacity. Sean Carberry, NPR News, Kabul.
And you're listening to NPR News.